Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning is one of the most important books of our time. But the problem is, most Americans don't even seem to know that it exists. Well, I read it recently. It is a fascinating read with so many gems of wisdom. And today I'm going to tell you the three biggest takeaways that I have. I'm Julie Hartman, and this is Timeless. Hey everyone, welcome to Timeless. I hope that you're having a great week. Just a reminder to hit the subscribe button down below so that you can stay notified every time I post a Julie Noted News video or a Timeless episode. And also be sure to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Julie R. Hartman. Now you all know that I love to read, but it wasn't always this way in my life. I actually didn't like to read for most of my life. But when I graduated from college about a year ago, I decided to enter the second stage of education where I reread all of the important books that I once thought were boring. Well, one of those books was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. I'll put a little asterisk next to this though, because I actually wasn't assigned this book and I sort of on the periphery knew about it. I didn't know that Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. I just thought it was a dude who was writing a book about meaning. But I decided to pick it up and read it recently. Super fast read. It took me 2 days. It's about 180 pages, big font, very palatable and easily understandable. And let me tell you, I think this book changed my life. Viktor Frankl is a name that all of us in America should know about. And just anecdotally, over the past 2 weeks, I've been going around in my life and asking some people who I know across all different age spectrums if they are aware of this book and of Viktor Frankl. And many of them say, like an earlier Julie Hartman, that they have no idea who he is. So my responsibility today is alert you to this individual. And as I said in the introduction, tell you three pieces of great life wisdom that can be gleaned from this book. It seems that today we suffered from a time with really poor and conflicting life advice. Again, as someone who just graduated from college, who's entering the so-called real world and trying to figure out my life and what it will look like, I am someone that has sought out a lot of advice from adults, from sources on the internet, late night Googling, going on YouTube, listening to shows. And it's really interesting to just see, again, how conflicting some of these pieces of advice are. Also, they center very much around this kind of moral relativism, that your moral approach to life is relative to you and to your circumstances. It's this kind of live your truth mentality. We hear that a lot in society nowadays. What's your truth? Speak your truth. Well, there isn't such a thing as your truth or my truth. There's your opinion and my opinion, your experience and my experience, but there is one universal, objective, eternal truth that stands outside and above each and every one of us. You wouldn't know that from the advice or even from the colloquialisms, about life that we get today. We're also told that religion is irrelevant and even stupid in many ways. That what you decide to do, again, the moral path that you decide to take, is all about you and your circumstances, what they dictate, a do what you need to do mentality. Well, Viktor Frankl, like so many of the great writers, rejects this notion on its head. He affirms that there are certain universal objective truths that we must abide by, and that we actually become greater human beings. We become more ourselves when we decide to follow that path. So before I tell you these three takeaways, let me just give you a brief background on the author himself. Viktor Frankl was an Austrian doctor, a psychiatrist. He was born in 1905. He died in 1997, which is really amazing because for over two years, when he was in Auschwitz and other concentration camps during World War II, he was nearly starved to death, lived under terrible conditions. I mean, terrible is a colossal understatement. Battled disease like so many of the other prisoners. And so it just shows you, again, this is fascinating. It shows you how revolutionary and indeed important his ideas are because he so thoroughly believed them. And I think it is what contributed to his long-lasting life. He lived 92 years despite being for almost 2 full years of his life on the edge of death. So as I said, he was a psychiatrist. He actually ran a hospital in Vienna. He had correspondences with Sigmund Freud, which I, as a history nerd, find to be so cool. These figures who we each kind of deal with in a vacuum. We think they would never interact with one another, and they do. Another interesting historical fact, I guess these two people didn't interact with one another, but it shows how historical figures can be tied in ways that we may not expect. Did you know that George Washington's great-granddaughter, I think it was his great-granddaughter by marriage, because his wife had kids prior to the marriage. George Washington's great-granddaughter by marriage was married to none other than Robert E. Lee, the head of the Army of the Confederacy. So here we have this titan for liberty against this titan of tyranny, and they are somehow tied in the historical sphere. Just interesting. So Frankl and Freud were tied. They wrote letters to one another. And in 1942, Frankl was such a prolific psychiatrist, a prolific thinker in Austria, that the United States actually offered him a visa to come to America and continue his psychiatry studies, to continue a big book that he was writing. And that would have allowed Frankl to escape his fate as a Nazi concentration inmate. And he knew that this would be his fate, because 1942 was 3 years into the war. There were already concentration camps open. I mean, the Nazis had a big presence in Austria. He knew that this would be his fate, or that something not great would be his fate. And you know what Frankl did? He refused to take the US visa. He writes about this in the introduction of his book. The reason why he decided not to take the visa was because of his parents. He cites a specific instance that really imparted to him that he should face his fate alongside his parents. It was when he was visiting his parents at their home, and he noticed that his father had a marble that seemed to be from a ruin. He asked his father, "Where is this marble from?" And his father responded, it was actually from one of the synagogues near their house that was destroyed by the Nazis. It was a marble taken from the rubble. But then his father said, and this wasn't just any old part of the synagogue, this marble was taken from the Ten Commandments, the slab in the synagogue which outlined the Ten Commandments. And even more than that, it was specifically taken from commandment number 4, which is honor your father and mother. So when Frankl learned this, he saw it as a sign, and he elected not to escape to America and face his fate alongside his parents. His parents were tragically killed while they were in the concentration camps, as well as Frankl's brother and his pregnant wife were murdered in Auschwitz. And yet, Viktor Frankl lived a long life. He lived to be a healthy and happy man. And he wrote this book, Man's Search for Meaning, in order to bring some of that happiness and health to the rest of us. So now this goes into the 3 main takeaways of the book. In just 15 minutes or 20 minutes of this episode, I think this person is giving better advice through me. I am his interlocutor? Sean, we're here. Sean is out today. Sean, we're here. He would laugh at me and immediately correct me. I am the translator. I am the baton passer of Viktor Frankl telling you his wisdom. We're going to get a hold of that word at least by the end of the episode. Number one, this is the biggest thesis statement of Viktor Frankl. It's in the title of his book. Viktor Frankl fundamentally believes that man's primary motivation is to find meaning in life. This is different from the other modern ways that we understood and still understand what drives human beings. Freud, the man who Frankl corresponded with, believed that human beings were animals of psychology, that we were motivated by psychological impulses, these events that happened to us when we were children that made an impact on us in ways that we didn't think. And those impulses, those drives have informed our behavior and our psyche for the rest of our lives. To Freud, man is a psychological creature. To Marx, man is an economic creature. Marx says that we are motivated by one thing, money. wealth, the pursuit of economic power. Viktor Frankl rejects those. He says, no, man is motivated by meaning. Men fund, and women, but man as in a human, fundamentally in every part of life want to find why it is that they are on this earth and make every interaction meaningful. We live now in a crisis of meaning, where people think that human beings are just a speck of dust on the great beach, if you will, of history, a grain of sand, I should say, on the great beach of history. In other words, we are insignificant. We are just here at this one place in time. The earth has existed for millions of years, and our existence is just this blip on the radar screen. No.
Interlocution.
What was that, Zach? One more time?
Interlocution.
Interlocution? Yeah, I don't think that's the word. Cution. Yeah, I don't think that's the word. We're gonna find it. People are gonna comment. Julie, I think it's interlocutor. God, this is gonna get me memed. This is so pathetic that I don't know this word. Anyway, putting the word aside, this is a really important point, that meaning is the fundamental thing that drives human beings, and that finding meaning in your lives makes you more human. As I said, we live in this time where people think that our existence is just insignificant. It's just this blip, that we are just material outcomes of evolution in the scientific world. And this allows us, or without even noticing it, this makes our life meaningless. Because if you view your life as that insignificant, you're going to view yourself and whatever you do is insignificant. We're tumbling down this hill of nihilism, where again, people think, oh, if I behave badly, well, it doesn't matter. I'm going to die anyway. No one's ever going to remember my existence. I'm just one of, you know, billions of people that have ever existed. Oh, if I stay in my room and scroll on Instagram all the time, what does it matter? It's just insignificant. That is what is contributing to this nihilism. We have to remember how meaningful our lives are and find that meaning. That is what Viktor Frankl's hypothesis is. It's called logotherapy. He invented this new type of therapy which places your meaning in life, your reason for your existence, at the center of the consultation. Because fundamentally, whatever woes you come with into the office, Viktor Frankl says, are rooted in this crisis of meaning. That is takeaway number one. Find your meaning in life, and you will be happier.
Interlocutor.
Thank you. That's what it is. The other word was a totally different word. Thank you.
Interlocutor.
Let's put that to rest for the episode. Just kidding. Play it again at the end. Just to remind us all. Number two, the second biggest takeaway. I love this one. Again, this is totally antithetical to the worldviews, the pieces of advice that we get today. Shows you how much things have shifted, because he wrote this book in 1946, and now in 2023, so many of his takeaways seem to be foreign to the culture that has come to permeate our society. Takeaway number two, his famous line, there are only two races in the world, the decent and indecent. When Viktor Frankl was asked how he felt about the German race after his experience, that was his reply. First of all, do you know what principle it takes for someone who has been in his position to not just blindly hate the German race? And he has the insight to go, no, that's wrong. There are good Germans and bad Germans. There are good men and women. There are bad men and women. There are good Christians and there are bad Christians. It's good and evil. Dividing the world in that way, good and evil, is so important and revolutionary. You know, it's not exactly a secret that I tend to lean politically conservative. I would say that I would vote more for Republicans than for Democrats. But still, I wouldn't consider myself like a blind loyalist to Republicans, that all Republicans are good, all Democrats are bad. No, there are some really good Republicans and really bad Republicans. There are some good Democrats, really good Democrats, and bad Democrats. I divide the world between good and evil. And when you see the world that way, you just become happier, because you're not putting people into these boxes. You're not applying your prejudices. That's right, your prejudices, your standards, your ideas of what they should be. You're just looking for whether or not they're good or bad. Can you imagine if more people thought this way? There wouldn't be this hatred of conservatives. You know, I was at a coffee store recently and there was a transgender barista that I see all the time when I go to this coffee store. And she said to me the other day, she said, "You know, Julie, you are so nice. You're just always so sweet to us, and we get all these Lululemon Range Rover LA mommies coming in and demanding their iced chai latte, and you really take the time to ask us how we are, and you're sweet." And this person said, I hope you know that I appreciate that." Meanwhile, this individual's transgender. They have they, them, or she, her, whatever the pronouns are, buttons on their jacket or their what's it called? See, I can't even define the words. What is it called? Apron, on their apron. They, you know, I'm sure this individual, and maybe I shouldn't judge prematurely, I'm sure this individual would be the type that would think that conservatives are bad people. In that moment, I wanted to say, "I'm conservative. You're telling me I'm nice? You wouldn't even believe that I'm conservative because you probably think people like me are evil, racist bigots." I just wish all of us could divide this world between nice, not nice, good and evil. That's what Viktor Frankl reminds us of. And number three, huge insight. I mean, it's honestly hard to distill it into three, but I want to give you the rundown so that you're motivated to read this book. And even if you don't read this book, you just take these insights with you. Insight number three is that the only freedom that you have in this world is how you react to situations. Viktor Frankl, like all of the other prisoners at those camps, literally had everything taken away from them. Their names were taken away from them. They were reduced to numbers. Their hair was shaven off. Think about you don't think of your hair as a part of you or as a possession, but it is. It is so dehumanizing. It is one of the worst things to have your hair shaven off. It's like it's a death of your dignity. They lost their hair. They obviously lost their possessions. They lost their family members. They lost their clothes. They were given these uniforms to wear. They lost even the fat on their skin. Viktor Frankl says he didn't even recognize his body because he was starved. And so all of the flesh and the fat that he had went away. I mean, literally, it was so, so evil the way that these Nazi concentration camp leaders would just transform the person to make them an animal, make them look like an animal, make them think of themselves as an animal. And of course, the Nazis treated them as animals. The one thing Viktor Frankl says that made him feel like a person amidst being treated like an animal was this sense of how he reacted to situations, his integrity, his moral compass. He said, "Even if I am reduced to a skeleton and I am beaten and I have to labor like an animal, I have a little bit of freedom because I have the freedom to react to the situation. And if I follow what I know to be right, then I have exercised freedom over this barbarity." I love that as an idea. Look, obviously right now, dear Lord, thank God, we are not living in remotely close to a time as what it would be like to live in a Nazi concentration camps. But of course, in everyday life, you are presented with challenges. We're presented with circumstances beyond our control that can reduce us to certain behaviors or ways of viewing life that we may not be proud of. And we must remember that the one freedom that we do have is our ability to react and crucially maintaining our integrity. He says, quote, "Only those who allowed their inner hold on their moral and spiritual selves to subside eventually fell victim to the camp's denigrating influence." Viktor Frankl said, "Even when I wanted to steal a ration of bread, I didn't. Even when I wanted to cut the line to get water, I didn't. Even when I wanted to lash out, I didn't. By maintaining my moral hold, I maintained myself and I maintained my freedom." Have I convinced you that this is a book worth reading? And what a shame indeed that so few of us even know this person's name. I hope you know it now, and I hope you are inspired to read this. Thank you so much for being here. Again, you can subscribe below. Follow me at Julie R. Hartman on Instagram and Twitter, and I'll see you soon.